Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times.
Welcome back, 12:06 at 12:60 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And as we begin hour number two on this Monday, let's check in with Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
A new report shows ICE agents catch and release most illegal immigrants. Now, didn't we talk about the catch and release program a couple of years ago?
Yeah, and so that's why this is so interesting that it's back. Now, this is a different catch and release.
Oh.
It may actually be, some people might find it a worse catch and release. The old catch and release was at the border. We would basically, you'd bring people in, they would come across the border, you'd catch them, you'd immediately take them, turn around, set them right back on the other side of the border, and they would basically, more often than not, turn around and try again the next night. This is catch and release in the interior, and it is, we are actually going after, the ICE agents are proactively going out to look at these folks. These are folks who they've gotten a tip on. They've gotten a tip from somebody or come across some information that suggested these are people who are probably able to be deported. They go out, they encounter the folks that they're going after, and in most cases, they end up, about 500,000 of the 700 and some odd thousand cases, they end up looking at the folks and just saying, nope, go on your way. We're not going to put you in deportation proceedings. And this, of course, is evidence of the new Homeland Security enforcement model. Most illegal immigrants are not subject to deportation, despite the worries and fears of immigrant rights activists. The danger of actually getting deported if you're what I call a rank-and-file illegal immigrant inside the U.S. is pretty low. Even more interesting, though, is that we're told that the Department of Homeland Security does want to go after criminals and folks with lots of immigration violations on their record, but the evidence suggests that the Homeland Security only went after about maybe 65% of those they encountered with criminal records, which means that there were some nearly 70,000 people with criminal records who were then released back into the streets as a catch and release as well.
Wow. And the immigrants' rights group want the president to order less deportations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's, look, the administration's in a really tough spot here. They're taking heat from both sides. You know, that's their job, of course. President Obama won the presidency. He gets to make the tough decisions. The problem that he's had is that he has artificially created numbers to make it seem like he is being tough on deportation so he can argue to the conservative side, hey, I am enforcing the law to the maximum that you guys have given me money to do. But all the memos he's issued and the policies he's issued, he goes to the folks on the other side, the immigrant rights advocates, and says, actually, I'm not really deporting most of you. I'm deporting the really hardened criminals. The problem is that these numbers suggest that basically he's now – both those two sides can no longer coexist. He can no longer make those arguments to both sides because there simply aren't enough criminal aliens that he's encountering that are serious enough by his own definition to be able to deport. And so we've actually done some research. I haven't written the full story on it yet, but I talked a little bit of it in this story, that deportations are down 20% from their peak a couple years ago. If they continue at the pace they're at, they'll be at about 320,000, 325,000 this year, which is the Homeland Security Department says it's budgeted for deporting 400,000 a year, which is why it said it would never go over that number in past years. But if they're budgeted for deporting 400,000 a year and they're only deporting 325,000 a year, that's when they can run into some real problems with legal issues and sort of whether the president is following the law.
By the way, in Arizona, ICE agents were actually cutting loose some who had committed identity theft?
Identity fraud, exactly. Oh. So the issue here, this gets at really what we're talking about, is the administration and they've released memos that say in general what they are looking for and what they're no longer going to be looking for when they talk about who they're deporting. But when you get into some of these cases and you hear these reports, you find out, well, identity fraud, that's a pretty serious thing. Now, obviously, a lot of illegal immigrants do identity fraud in order to continue to maintain their lives here. But this gets at the real question. There's a real movement among a number of immigrant rights advocates and, as we found out last week, among Vice President Joe Biden himself, who called the 11 million illegal immigrants in the country. He said they're already American citizens by his definition.
Yeah.
You know, what this gets at is the question of, okay, what do you actually have to do? What laws do you actually have to be breaking in order to for us to decide that you are deportable, that we don't want you here? There's the former head of ICE, the former acting head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, wrote an op-ed in the L.A. Times last week where he said, look, illegal immigrants who have merely broken immigration laws, even if we've already deported them several times and they've repeatedly snuck back in here, that's not a reason to deport them again. And that would be a major change. There are a lot of folks that think that's what President Obama might do in this next update of his deportation policies he's talking about. But basically, we're getting into a very serious discussion here about what it means to actually be within the law in the U.S. and what laws we care about. And there's a very real segment of the Obama administration that appears to believe that unless you are a murderer or the most serious of felons, you know, a few misdemeanors, maybe even minor felonies on your record, and as we learned, apparently identity theft, identity fraud, those are not serious enough to make you excludable from the U.S.
All right. Now, let's talk about the country and various cities. There are different results.
Yeah, the most stunning one here is that if you are an ICE agent and you encounter somebody in the Los Angeles region, you're almost certainly going to let that person go. I believe it was 80% get released back.
Wow.
If you are in San Diego and you're an ICE agent, you're going to arrest and put in deportation proceedings 95% of the people you encounter. So you're talking about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive difference there, and yet a giant difference in the actual rates that are going on. And there are a number of different explanations for that, but still, this is a complaint that both sides of the debate have with the administration, which is that they all want to see some sort of uniform and standard policy so that everybody knows what's going on. And the problem is with all the different discretion memos out there, there are folks in the Dallas office there are immigrant rights advocates in the Dallas area who say the Dallas ICE office is a lot tougher than, say, an office just somewhere else in Texas. And so you don't get a lot of predictability, and it's unclear exactly how serious your crimes are. It makes it difficult for just about everybody involved, including the ICE agents themselves, who sometimes believe they want to deport somebody, and instead their supervisors say, nope, that's not a deportable person.
Hmm. All right, I want to move on to something else before you run here today. Civil rights group appeals voter registration form ruling. That didn't take long, did it? You and I talked about this on Friday.
Yep, that's exactly right. And here they are. It's not surprising. The real question will be exactly what the courts do with this. The ruling, the lower court ruling out of Kansas, and this is the one that says that states are allowed to go ahead and ask for proof of citizenship when voters fill out a registration card. The federal agency, Election Administration Commission, hadn't wanted to ask that question on the forms it distributes in states, and a lower court ruling said, no, you can't refuse the state's request. They're allowed to do this. The Constitution gives them this right. The groups that had challenged initially have, as you said, have now appealed this. They argue that, well, a Supreme Court ruling from last year suggests that this is an additional burden and an unwarranted burden. I don't find that in the Supreme Court case. It'll be very interesting to see, but I actually think the lower court judges language is pretty straightforward there. So I imagine this will eventually, it will almost certainly get heard by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, and eventually will probably make its way back to the Supreme Court, and then we'll see whether the Supreme Court takes it. But yeah, no, as you said, it's a pretty quick turnaround, pretty quick appeal, and it'll be sort of, you know, from a legal standpoint, it'll be fun to see what the appeals judges do with it.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a judge sitting on a bench and somebody says, okay, these immigrants, they don't think they need proof of citizenship. They can simply say they're American. They get the form. They fill it out in any language, and then they simply are eligible to vote.
Yeah, you know, when you step back and you look at it from the standpoint of, okay, well, if a state has a requirement, and I think just about every state does, that you have to be a citizen to vote, then why shouldn't you be able to ask for that proof? If you ask for proof of identity that you are who you actually are, why can't you also ask for proof that you are eligible? You know, we want to know that your age matches. Why can't we also ask that your citizenship is correct?
Yeah.
And from that standpoint, that does seem logical. Having said that, of course, is that there are a lot of issues about past barriers to voting that have been set up. And so judges and Congress and a number of people in the country are understandably worried about unwarranted burdens to voting. The question is whether showing, and for what it's worth, I believe that the courts have ruled that you can't require proof of citizenship every time somebody goes to vote. But the question is, it seems to be okay to require proof of citizenship upon the initial registration. Then the question is, what are the states actually allowed to do to go ahead and determine, demand, or prove that that citizenship? And that's where this current fight is happening.
Yeah. Okay, one more thing. Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach.
Secretary of State.
Is that who? Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
He thinks the ruling will stand?
Yeah, he thinks that the lower court ruling, he's the guy who's fought for this Kansas law and the Arizona law, and he thinks that the lower court ruling is as clear as can be. And based on what the Supreme Court did last year, I tend to agree with his analysis of this. I think it'll be a tough road for groups to try and overturn this.
I got you. All right, Stephen, as always, thanks for your help. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. 1216 to 1260 WRC. Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times. Stay tuned. Robert Knight, we've got a great piece in today's Washington Times. You'll want to hear about it next.